Journaling can change your brain. Here are 4 ways to do it. Take 10 minutes tonight and write about whatever is stressing you. It sounds ordinary, but its effects are extraordinary. In one study, people who wrote expressively about their traumatic experiences over the course of 3 days visited the doctor less frequently in the following months than people who wrote about trivial topics. Nobody changed their diet. Nobody started working out. The only thing that changed was what they put on the page. So how can a pen and a blank page create such a difference? Here are 4 ways journaling benefits the mind. Name it to tame it. When a bad feeling hits, many of us try to push it down, talk ourselves out of it, or use busyness to numb it out. However, the better approach is to name that feeling instead. Researchers at UCLA scanned participants' brains while showing them photos of angry and frightened faces. One group simply looked at the faces. The other had to describe the emotion shown in one word, such as angry or afraid. You may assume that naming or dwelling on a negative emotion makes it stronger. However, the research found the opposite. Labeling the emotion calmed the brain's alarm system, the amygdala. Instead, it activated a region behind the forehead that regulates reasoning and rationality. In other words, naming an emotion allows your rational mind to better control your emotions. Researchers call this effect labeling, in which you feel something, name it, and that feeling mellows. The research aligns with a long-standing tradition across numerous philosophies and religions of looking inward. Pausing to reflect on and identify what you feel helps you process the emotion. This is the core of journaling. In many ways, journaling is effect labeling stretched across a page rather than compressed into a single word. In a similar effect labeling study, participants whose brains had shown a greater response when they put emotions into words experienced the greatest gains, up to 3 months later. People reported reduced anxiety, depression, and physical discomfort, and greater life satisfaction. Close the loops. Your brain dislikes leaving things unfinished. The text you never replied to. The bill you keep forgetting. The thing you should have said but didn't. These unfinished tasks linger in the background, running on a loop, competing for your attention. In a 2011 study, fittingly titled Consider It Done, researchers asked participants to think of tasks that were important to them and needed to be completed in the next few days. Just by thinking of the tasks, the participants experienced greater distraction. And there was a clear spillover effect. The participants did worse on a reading test that had nothing to do with their unfinished tasks. However, that was just half the experiment. Later, the researchers had participants write down a clear plan, stating when, where, and how they would complete each task. And those distracting, intrusive thoughts disappeared. Just writing the plan freed people up, as if the job were already done. The effect was strongest when people made plans they genuinely intended to carry out. A vague plan didn't produce the same relief. This is why getting your worries onto paper feels like such a relief. The problem is not solved yet, but you have moved it out of your head. Psychologists call this cognitive offloading. While a general reminder like follow up on the billing issue can keep circling in your mind, writing call the bank at 10 a.m. Tuesday about the payment gives the task a clear time, place, and next step. Interestingly, the more detailed the list, the greater the benefit. A Baylor study split participants into 2 groups. One spent 5 minutes before bed writing tomorrow's to-do list. The other wrote about what they'd already finished that day. The to-do list group fell asleep faster. And the longer and more detailed their list, the quicker they dozed off. It feels counterintuitive, as writing down everything you still need to do can feel daunting. However, the literature shows it can help you put those thoughts down and sleep. Create some distance. Whenever you need to figure something out, instead of writing in the first person, refer to yourself by name. Talk about yourself like you're talking about a friend. Rather than, I felt anxious about the meeting, write, felt anxious about the meeting. It is only a small change in wording, but research suggests that shifting from I to your own name can meaningfully change your perspective. And your brain really does love it. Psychologist Ethan Cross tested this across 7 experiments. In one, people had to give a speech with almost no time to prepare, which is most people's nightmare. This experimental setup is a classic and sure way to stimulate stress. Interestingly, the ones who coached themselves by name went in calmer, performed better, and spent less time beating themselves up afterward. Another study found that the moment people switched to their own name, the brain's stress signal dropped in about a second, and it didn't cost them any extra mental effort. Just a little bit of self-distancing. There's old wisdom in this. We are all brilliant at solving other people's problems, but often fail to see our own. When a friend calls with a difficult situation, the answer can come right away. However, when the same problem comes to us, we get stuck. Psychologists call this Solomon's paradox, after the king renowned for wisdom, who couldn't apply it to his own affairs. Fortunately, there's an easy fix: distancing. When people step back and look at their own problem from a distance, they can reason about it as wisely as they would for a friend. This can be applied to journaling as well. In a month-long diary writing study, people wrote about each day's most significant event either in the first or third-person perspective. At the end, those who wrote in third-person were measurably wiser in how they worked through problems. They were more open to different viewpoints and to how situations could unfold. You don't need a whole month, either. A follow-up week-long study replicated the effect. What is interesting is that this self-distancing may also emerge naturally to some extent. In expressive writing, when people write about hard experiences with no instructions at all, they drift into self-distancing on their own over a few sessions. They start using fewer "is" and more words that explain why things happened. The page pulls you out of your own head by itself. Tell a story. We don't remember our lives as a list of facts. We remember them as a story. And how you tell the story to yourself matters. Dan McAdams, a psychologist at Northwestern University, found that people who tell stories about life events that move from negative to positive, such as a failure that taught them something, or a low point that led somewhere, tend to be happier and healthier. People who tell their stories the other way, with good things sliding into bad, tend to do worse. This does not mean forcing a painful event into a happy one when you journal, or pretending that all is good. Rather, it means allowing yourself to move beyond raw emotional venting and ask what it meant. Psychologist James Pennebaker and his team examined the writing of 177 grieving people to see why some of them showed better health outcomes. Those who did better showed a change in their language over time. These people started using more words like realize, understand, because, and reason. They stopped just describing what happened and started making sense of it. By turning a difficult experience into a story, you can connect causes, consequences, and make meaning from the experience. When journaling backfires, a blank page can feed a negative loop just as easily as a positive one. A common concern about journaling is that dwelling on hard feelings can slide into rumination, where you keep replaying everything that's wrong. If you sit down and circle the same hurtful scenario for the 40th time, you are not necessarily processing it. You may simply be reliving it. The difference between gaining insight and rumination is in perspective. Asking, why do I feel this way? While you are inside, the feeling keeps you stuck, but asking the same question after taking a step back leads to insight. Having the right structure and distance helps keep writing from turning into rumination. So if writing regularly leaves you more distressed than when you started, treat that as a signal, not as a failure. Step back. Make a plan. Focus on understanding rather than replaying. Or simply close the notebook and return later. The goal is to move through the feeling, not remain inside it. Timing matters too. While a bedtime to-do list may help people sleep, if you do the opposite and pour out all your heavy feelings right before bed, you will probably sleep worse. If something feels heavy, consider writing about it earlier in the evening. Keep the final few minutes before sleep for something simple or a calmer reflection. More is also not always better. In a study, people who counted their blessings once a week reported increased well-being. People who did it 3 times a week got no benefit at all, and some felt slightly worse. Repetition makes a practice automatic and less emotionally meaningful, and your brain stops noticing it. What to write tonight? We just discussed 4 mechanisms: labeling, offloading, distancing, and narrative structure. And you can touch all of them in a short entry before bed. Here's exactly what to write tonight, depending on what you need. 1. Visualize for an easier start. There is a prompt called Best Possible Self. Write about your life going as well as it realistically could. Write about your work, your relationships, and your health. This is not about magical thinking. Rather, it is about visualizing a meaningful and achievable future. It reliably improves optimism and well-being. 2. If something is weighing on you, use Pennybaker's method. Write for 15 to 20 minutes. Don't stop to fix your spelling or make it sound nice. Just go straight at whatever's bothering you. The first day might leave you feeling worse before it helps. However, that is normal. The perspective and insights start to build over the next few days. And by your last session, try to tie it together, because the people who land on "here is why it happened" and "here is what it changed" are the ones who get better. 3. To-do list. If all you want is to fall asleep after a tiring day, set the feelings aside and write tomorrow's to-do list. Spend 5 minutes and be as specific as you can. Let the paper hold them for the night. Here's the one template you can follow. Spend 5 to 10 minutes filling one page. A few lines about one event from today, written like a scene rather than a summary. One feeling you experienced and your best guess at why it's there. 5 things to handle tomorrow, each specific enough to picture. One thing, however small, that went right, as a way to practice gratitude. On a parting note, did you know that the most influential journal in history was never meant to be read? Marcus Aurelius wrote his journal during wars and plagues, leaving private notes to himself about how to stay steady and act more righteously. He never titled it or planned to publish it, but centuries later we call it Meditations, and people still turn to it to feel less alone. He was doing the thing journaling does best, using a page to think more clearly and steady himself. You can do the same tonight. The act is ordinary. What it does to you is not.